As a great 21st century philosopher once said, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Let's go do it. Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Play of the opening drive for the Seahawks. And Carson, like last week, it looks like he's stopped and he gets the touchdown. Second goal. Instead, they go the other way for the touchdown to Nick Barnett. Mahomes dancing and firing over the middle, and that is caught by a wide open Conley, and the ball is punched away from him. And then Hill is there, but Seattle will recover.
Seahawks have had real problems covering wide receivers on the outside, but watch Hill go get this ball, because Tyreek Hill was coming from the other way.
Wilson.
They're spotting Justin Houston.
Out from behind, and then it's caught at the 42, and breaking a tackle is Ed Dixon for a first down. Wilson to the corner, and it is a touchdown. Doug Baldwin. Carson is the back, bring the fullback Trey Madden in. Wilson escapes, does a Houdini. Down the middle he runs and slides to a stop at the 17-yard line. And Wilson is throwing, and that is caught. Ed Dixon for the touchdown. And Wilson going for it all, and it is somehow at the 21-yard line. Lockett pulls it in. And Charvarius Ward has to turn around and go, are you kidding? Welcome to 19. Wilson throws. It's one-handed and caught. Flag is down. Baldwin holds it in. They're going to pull him down at the one-yard line, but let's see about the flag, which is at the 15.
Well, it did not get called, but again, Wilson moving to his left, able to drop it straight down.
Carson who fights his way into the end zone.
So it's a fantastic night for us. We're going to the playoffs, and I'm really proud that this team has done that. Yeah, there weren't very many people that thought we would ever have a chance to be in this position, but the guys in the room did, led by the leaders, Bobby and Russell and Doug and Frank and Jay Reed, Tyler, all those guys. They just would not think anything but we were going to do something special with this team this year. And I know it looked bleak at times and all that. We started terribly and all, but it really, this is a real statement about leadership a magnificent job, because we're a young team, and they led these guys to believe it. And so here we are. So Merry Christmas. Yeah. What do you got?
Yeah, as Pete Carroll says, Merry Christmas to all Seahawks fans, as the Seahawks clinched a playoff spot yet again with a Sunday night win. This we will cover that and everything else from the fallout from Sunday Night Football as well. Looking forward to the regular season finale this weekend against the Cardinals on this week's edition of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one only unofficial UK Seahawkers podcast, with myself, Stuart Court, and as ever, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I am ever so well, thank you. It's been a nice Christmas week, and looking forward to the new year and some playoff football.
Yeah, playoff football is not what we expected during the off season. It wasn't really what we expected probably 4 or 5 weeks ago either, was it?
No, I mean, after the second Rams game, when it was looking like we were going to have to go and pretty much win out, it seemed fairly unlikely. And that's, aside from the aberration in Santa Clara, that's what we've done, unbelievably. And here we are. And football in January, very exciting.
So obviously the Seahawks clinched their playoff spot for the sixth time in seven Russell Wilson seasons, with a 38-31 win over Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Last week we said the performance and everything in San Francisco and Santa Clara was nothing as nothing could be, but this was complete as complete can be, wasn't it, on Sunday night?
It was great, and actually I was rewatching some of the stuff from the game today, and you know, we spent a lot of last week moaning about when they get behind the sticks, they basically just give up on the drive. And I think we got 21 points on Sunday from drives where we were on second and very long or third and long. And they made a play and they converted it. I think there was one Russell Wilson run for in the first quarter. Then there was a pass to Ed Dixon where he broke a tackle, and it was almost a dump off that, and Dixon did really well to get out of it. And then I think there was the long pass to Baldwin that he caught at the 1 yard line. And it, you know, ultimately Schottenheimer, you know, he's not everyone's cup of tea, but if he is going to address things like that, then it's a pretty good way to get certainly me more on side than I was. So that was really good to see. Maybe they listen to the podcast.
Maybe.
That you'd have to assume they do.
Yeah, you'd hope they would. But I think also the Tyler Lockett moon ball, I think that might have been like second and 13 or something like that as well. I'm not too sure. Recollection isn't strong with that one. But yeah, there were obviously, as there is every week, a few occasions where play calling and everything else was frustrating. But yeah, I think that I think I posted in our group chat, or maybe even to you directly, that that's as complete a Seahawks win as I can remember in probably in a couple of years. Definitely haven't had one this year, because there's always been a few drawbacks defensively. They've give up too much, or Russell Wilson's made a few too many mistakes, or running game's not been there, and Russell Wilson's had to carry it. But I can't remember a game that was everything, because that is a proper team that they beat, and they handled pretty much. Obviously, they still put up 31 points, but the quarterback is probably going to win MVP. The defense is going to have some players which are going to be paid, and D-Ford and Eric Berry. But yeah, that, and it's one of the top offensive play callers, as we said, in Andy Reid. But that they just handled their business and pretty impressive, and especially with the playoffs so close, it's sent a warning shot across the NFL, hasn't it? With, as you said, playoffs just 10 days away now, Adam.
100%. I don't know about you, but I got in from... I catered a wedding on Sunday, and I got in literally at kickoff. And I'd been at work since about 8 in the morning, so I'm just off the back of like a 17-hour day, and I walked in and sat down, and Rosie was awake, and she said, there's no chance you're staying awake for this game. But I soldiered on, and I sat down. And I was watching it, but I was definitely dozing at times during the game. And I've rewatched most of it back today, and I didn't actually realize, because I was drifting in and out, and I saw all the big plays, but you know, not every single play. I didn't quite gauge the tension of it. And I think that's probably the thing I was most happy with, that to play under such pressure, you know, in a 3-point game against, as you said, the best quarterback in the league in terms of someone that can just stack points against you, to keep the cold heads they did and execute in the way they did. That's what gives me the most faith going into the playoffs, because, I mean, that was a serious game.
Yeah, it was. I think Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels mentioned it more than one occasion through the night, where the game was the perfect taster for former Mahomes, obviously in his first year as a starter, because it was a playoff atmosphere. It had playoff level things hanging off it. Obviously, they could have clinched the division round, first round buys and everything. We obviously could have clinched and did clinch a playoff spot. It just had that feel of a game that was playing in January, obviously, but with teams on opposite conferences, which we probably won't see. Well, we won't see for another 4 years, unless it's like Super Bowl matchup somewhere down the line. Everything felt big. But even saying that, I tweeted at the start of the game that I had no excitement levels for this game. I think we covered on the podcast last week, I expected it to be a bit of a boat race off the back of what was a pretty shambolic showing in San Francisco, but the opposite came through. Obviously, the big plays.
For me, like people criticizing the Kansas City against the Rams game, saying, oh, you know, it's too many points, 54, 50, 51, whatever. For me, that game was like the perfect blueprint of the game. There were enough stops and enough big plays and enough points that I don't know how anyone could watch that and scoff at it. Even those that, you know, love the hardline defensive games, there was enough of that in that game. And I don't think anyone could leave that game thinking it was anything other than an absolute barnstormer.
Yeah, it was a proper game. And as I said, just add all the ingredients and everything involved, all the people involved, the right people stood up and stepped up. It was obviously more in the Seahawks' favour than the Chiefs' favour. The Seahawks offensive, though, as is always, went for the most part as Russell Wilson went, 18 for 29, 271 yards and 3 touchdowns. Obviously added 8 carries and 57 yards, a couple of them scrambles, one of them which was a big time play, as you mentioned, on I think he broke out and did his Houdini stuff and then had all of Seattle to run into. But he wasn't asked again, obviously under 30 attempts yet again in 2018, but he put himself in a conversation, even though he was a very dark horse. He put his name into the hat for a lot of postseason individual honours, didn't he?
Well, I was just thinking that. And when do they actually get decided? Is it based on the 16 regular season games?
I think it is. I think like vote. It's announced Super Bowl week. I think it's announced.
Which is silly, really, because it should be done after the big game, but I would say that if they were going to announce it, let's say in the middle of February, if he could add 2 playoff wins to this season in the way that he played on Sunday, then I think you could make a strong case that he'd be an MVP candidate, because every single one of the current candidates has had a 3 or 4 week period where it's not been quite as good as the rest of it. You know, Breeze is going through it now. Rivers is, you know, has, you know, lost a big game against Baltimore. Mahomes has lost his 4 biggest games of the season. I think Wilson certainly would deserve to be in the conversation if he can put it together in January again.
But I think I think the thing that's always going to be drawn against and held against Russell Wilson is that how this team is set up in under Pete Carroll. It's set up as a run first team, and no matter how ridiculous and how tenuous that is, that is going to count against him and things like this, because you could easily say, especially this year, more than last year, that the reason the Seahawks have won these games is because of the running game, because of Chris Carson and his 1,000 yards and the touchdowns and the just running over defenders. That's going to be much more of a bigger takeaway for outsiders and people who haven't followed this team obviously as closely as we have, and all the people who cover this team have, obviously. But I think the outside looking in, seeing Pete Carroll running the ball more than the second most rushes per game in the NFL is the Seattle Seahawks. That is probably, when it comes down to it, when you look at it on paper, is going to be what is always probably had against Russell Wilson when it comes to these end of season honours, unless he just completely sets the world on fire and breaks every record known to man, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably wouldn't be doing as well if the run game wasn't working the way it is. But they definitely wouldn't be doing as well if Wilson wasn't their quarterback.
I think
he's still been, as we've said the whole way, the run game has complemented outstanding quarterback play this season, as opposed to the other way around, which I think is unfortunately the way that the mainstream media are looking at it.
Yeah, I'd agree. But obviously, Russell Wilson was highlighted by some impressive throws, made better by some even more impressive catches. But the most wow play from Russell Wilson himself was that deep ball, which came down with everything, came down with that car that Elon Musk sent up into the atmosphere a few months ago. It was, but he is, I think people are starting to realise it, and people at Hawkblog, I think Beb Baldwin's been posting stuff today about it. He doesn't only have the prettiest deep ball throw in the NFL, he's effective at doing that, and like few other quarterbacks are in the NFL, isn't he?
Yeah, it was such a bizarre pass to see it come down with so much height. It's amazing you could have so much control on a ball that goes so high. And it's not normally the way he throws it. I mean, the pass to Baldwin that he caught with one hand was a more typical Wilson trajectory pass. But it was unbelievable. And you know, fair play to Lockett, who, those plays always look kind of better for the quarterback than the receiver, I think, if that makes sense. It doesn't seem like a wow catch, but to track a ball from that height, I'd love to see. I've always wanted them to kind of put a little camera on each player's helmet so you can see what they're looking at. I'd love to see what sort of view he had of the ball against the fans and against the floodlights and whatever for that pass, because that was an amazing catch.
A few years ago, there's a thing where I think we saw it when we were lucky enough to go around the VMAC, Adam. The red line offense where the Seahawks line up and it's like 5 yards in from the sideline, and Tyler Lockett runs that perfectly because he has enough room for that ball to have a bit of a window to his outside shoulder, and that's exactly what he did. And his field awareness to know where he was in the field and to keep the DB, who played it pretty perfectly. He was stride for stride. The throw was just ridiculous. And also one more thing from that is that Chris Collinsworth's analysis on it, that the fact that when it's so high, it's easier for a receiver to catch was interesting, especially when you see some of the balls being thrown by Messrs. Bortles and Josh Johnsons of the world. The appreciation levels of Russell Wilson probably aren't as high as they should be when we look back on it in 10, 15 years' time, is it, Adam?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, on the receiver point of view, the quality of play that Baldwin and Lockett are bringing, you know, I've said this on the podcast the whole way through. For me, it's all about the ability and quality of route running versus size and speed, which obviously they have the speed anyway, but the cleanliness of their routes, which is a ridiculous phrase, but you know, every step is accounted for, and it's just so clean. And it's always been a criticism of Wilson that he doesn't throw guys open, like he waits for them to be open before he throws. And actually, with those two guys, it's a pretty perfect trio.
Well, I think Doug Baldwin spent most of his post-game press conference bigging up all the other receivers, Ed Dixon included in that group as well. The word he kept using was savages, how they're savages. The Woots, WOOTS, has been the thing which the receiver rooms have for quite a few years, and Doug Baldwin mentioned it's been there since Sidney Rice was a Seahawks. And I think that mentality, it starts with DB89, it's filtering through, and you see in Tyler Lockett, in his, probably his first true year, obviously he had his rookie year, then he had the second year, which is curtailed by injury. Last year obviously appears to be the one where he had to recover, and then this year you kind of see what Tyler Lockett can do. And as you say, and Brian Bolding has also pointed out where those two would just make things happen for their quarterback, and then vice versa, the quarterback makes things happen for them, because the Doug Baldwin touchdown catch is just, it's probably better than Tyler Lockett's catching it, because it's just the body control to get his any sort of body part down on the ground and get it inside the pylon is properly impressive, when you just think whatever else could be going through his head at that moment, Adam.
Yeah, phenomenal. And Dixon's catch, you know, the ability to stay light on his feet and on the ball, you know, on his toes to make that the change of direction was great. Even Nick Vinette, you know, he was really light on his feet, and it was almost elegant. It was great to watch.
Next gen stats say Russell Wilson has attempted the third most difficult passes this season out of the 39 qualified quarterbacks, which points to the fact that the receiver and maybe the scheme, if we're nitpicking, are not getting open, but Russell Wilson is still throwing some dimes and effectively moving this offense forward and getting points on the board. So on Baldwin and Lockett, they combined on Sunday night for 11 catches for 225 yards of Russell Wilson's 271, and obviously the one Doug Baldwin touchdown. Ed Dixon caught a touchdown, which was almost like a goalkeeper making a Hollywood save for the TV cameras, wasn't it? How he kind of dived and kept his hands in the air and kept the ball off the ground. It was very goalkeeper-ish on Sunday night.
Yeah, it was just an awesome catch. And obviously Mahomes had a similar pass to Williams, that kind of sidearm fling, which was insane. But Wilson found a way to get the ball to his guys. You know, again, the pass to Vinette is not a typical pass. It was almost like a shovel more than a pass, and that was a little sidearm. He pulled out every trick in the book, as he often does in prime time.
Pete Carroll was asked after the game if all the talk, all the hype, for lack of a better word, around Mahomes, if that kind of pushed Russell Wilson on Sunday night, and he said probably. And if you kind of watch how he played and how he handled himself, it was like the hold my beer meme, wasn't it? Every time that Mahomes throw to Jack Andrick West, not just his body, his arm angle is just, it looks painful, and it's just on. It's not only is it on point, and it's with some good force. It's a perfect spiral on it as well. It was just a ridiculous throw, but Russell Wilson did out duel him for that cliche to come into the mix as well. Before the season, there was a lot of talk, most prominently from the former Seahawk number 25, Richard Sherman, who said before the season, I think maybe even during the season when the Seahawks started sluggishly, shall we say, if the Seahawks and the front office and the coaching staff and the players had lost their way. Doug Baldwin was asked about that after the Seahawks clinched their playoff spot on Sunday night, and here is what he said in the most honest Doug Baldwin way imaginable.
Another 21st century philosopher, Richard Sherman, said during the offseason that the Seahawks lost their way. Would you say he missed that one?
No, he didn't miss that one. We did lose our way for a minute. And I think that, it was hard to hear the ugly truth about some things at times, but, sometimes the truth is also beautiful. And it forces you to look at yourself. And I think that, they're going to get mad at me for saying this, and he's already, trying to figure out how they're going to fix this. But truth of the matter is that we had some questions that we had to answer. And I think that we have done an excellent job as players, as coaches, as staff, at really asking ourselves the hard truths about who we want to be, what our identity is going to be. And we've figured it out. Now there's still work to be done. Obviously, we're not done. We still got a lot of work to finish and accomplish throughout the course of finishing this season and then getting into the tournament. So, no, I don't think he was off. I think he was spot on. But we answered the call.
So yeah, outside of Doug, Tyler, and Russ, obviously the main other guy on the offense was Chris Carson. Rashad Penny was inactive. JD McKissick was again pretty limited in snaps, only getting one carry on the ground and no catches. But Chris Carson had another 100-yard day and found his way into the end zone for two more, what are becoming vintage Chris Carson touchdown runs, where he carries defenders and O-linemen into the end zone. Adam, 116 yards on 27 carries. He's obviously going to continue to be the focal point, but he's earning belief that he can get the job done when the calendar turns to the new year, Adam.
He's just been a complete load in the last few weeks. I mean, all his last three touchdowns, I've kind of lost him in the pack, and all of a sudden he's emerged with the ball in the end zone. That first one, I literally, partly because my eyes were half closed from exhaustion, but I literally had no idea where the guy was. And all of a sudden, Al Michaels is celebrating the fact that we scored a touchdown. It was amazing. There will always be a durability concern with him. And, the worry is that they're going to want to go to him over and over and over again in January, depending on where they're playing. And we just have to hope that his body's able to kind of hold firm for another few weeks, because he's never had to do it before. And when he has had 30-odd carries, it's not gone that well for him from a health perspective. So hopefully it's kind of becoming a muscle memory that he's taking the wax and he's learning from it. And he's going to be able to keep,
yeah,
keep
and
going through
it. Rashad Penny will be back, obviously with no fullbacks in his recovery, but it does sound like he'll be back for the Week 17 game, which could be interesting how they split the load. But Pete Carroll said they're not going to be resting players for that entire game, but didn't say if there would be snap counts for the likes of Carson and maybe Doug Baldwin as well. But one person who probably we haven't spoke about his job title as much as we did his predecessor, but Mike Solari deserves a hell of a lot of credit, because I mean, we've seen over the last 4, 5, 6 years when we had Tom Cable as the O-line coach, if one injury would just completely shut everything down for the Seahawks. But on Sunday, with no Jermaine Ifedi, J.R. Sweezy went out injured pretty early on. DJ Fluker was nowhere near 100%. But the O-line apart from a few faults when I think Russell Wilson was sacked two or three times. The rotation doesn't seem to be an issue, and the coaching seems, which is true on the other side of the ball with the coordinator on that side of the ball, but it seems to be a massive positive for the 2018 Seahawks is that the coaching is actually working, and there's not that fall off from OT1 to OT2, Adam.
No, which is, I guess, is the ultimate in sporting coaching, really, isn't it? The fact that the players can be fit into a system and the system still works, that is really what you dream about with your team. So hopefully that's something that can carry on. It is amazing the difference that Solari's made. And, you know, of all the Tom Cable jokes, and even Tom Cable's biggest supporter, I think would find it very difficult to suggest there's not been an enormous difference made so far, because it's just start.
As I said, there is the few alarming plays, but the negative to positive is completely the opposite direction as it was particularly last year. I mean, even Pošić had a few of those on Sunday night, but he played in two positions on Sunday, and Pete Carroll spent most of the week raving about just doing that, and the ability to play both left guard and right guard once J.R. Sweezy went out with what sounds a pretty painful foot injury. One of the guys who did step in, Jermaine Ifedi, obviously missed the game and appears to be somewhat of a game day decision heading into week 17, was George Fant, who last week, a couple of weeks ago, caught a 9 or 10 yard pass and set the world alight. But he's going to make for an interesting decision. He could be forcing the issue with Jermaine Ifedi at right tackle, because he did have a pretty solid standout game on the right-hand side of the line, didn't he?
Yeah, and against a team like Arizona, who have always given us fits with their front seven, regardless of whether they're good, bad, winning, losing, or whatever, you'd almost say give Fant a go this week, see what happens, considering there's not an awful lot riding on it, and see what you've got, because you probably know what you've got with Ifedi going into Dallas against DeMarcus Lawrence or whatever, so why not try it and see what you've got?
I'd agree, but it will be interesting to track over the offseason to see what happens there, because obviously Dwayne Brown's only got a couple more years left on his contract, so that could be, it would be interesting to see what they do with Ifedi and Fant during the offseason. But that's a question for another day. On the defensive side, though, we just mentioned Mike Solari deserves a lot of credit. Outside of Pete Carroll, I don't think anyone deserves more credit than what Ken Norton is doing in this defense, because after what was a pretty shoddy couple of weeks, obviously being lit up by Nick Mullins for 600 yards, nearly 700 yards over the two San Francisco games, they shut down, for the most part, one of the more home run hitting wide receivers and a pretty damn good tight end in Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Adam, it's another example of a job very well done by Ken Norton Jr., wasn't it?
For absolute certain. I think that the Chiefs are going to be the big let playoff again, because I think without Kareem Hunt, who was such an upgrade on what they had, you know, the ability to throw a screen that would 5 yard touch up one block, I think their offensive scheming is going to be markedly different, and I don't think Hill is completely healthy. They've kind of all had their absentees at the wrong time, but still, to manage to limit that offense to what we did, and I would say that 31 points is limiting Patrick Mahomes. It was a tremendous effort from all of them, and again, you've got players who you've typically at the start of the year would never have thought would be making plays and doing huge things.
Yeah, and as we said last
you.
Week, a lot of my confidence, and I think your confidence, hinged on the presence of number 30, Bradley McDougal, and he was out there on Sunday and he did not miss a step, and apparently come out of the game feeling fine, so should be good for this week as well. But it's quite something, and especially the money he's making comparative to other people in that defensive backfield who haven't done much, haven't been able to make much impact in this 2018 Seahawks season. It's quite impressive how important and integral he is back there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so on that, obviously him and Tedrick Thompson have formed a pretty good partnership, but Earl Thomas is, you know, the elephant in the room is the fact that you still do have a cracker offering him a contract. What would you do with the safety situation right now?
I think that ship has sailed. I think the minute he unfurled his middle finger in Arizona, I think people on the Seahawks sideline kind of bid him adieu and out of sight, out of mind.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think Bob Condotta has tweeted a few times when he asked Pete Carroll a few weeks ago about bringing Earl off the IR return list if they make the playoffs, and obviously they have, which seems to be a viable thing, because I think he's back running everything now, and he was basically laughed off. I think that ship has long sailed. I would not also would not be surprised if he ends up playing for the team we just beat on Sunday night, but I think that could be something to watch further down the West Coast in Santa Clara, though. Just I think he's going to have the same mindset of a certain Mr. Sherman, but yeah, I think that ship has sailed. You?
I think you're probably right. The only thing I'd say is that money does talk, and for the first time in a while, we're going to be in a fairly privileged position of having some money to spend. And, you know, last year, when it was a case of with Sherman's contract, you know, we needed to rob Peter to pay Paul in a way. We don't need to do that now. And I just wonder if Thomas doesn't get the offers that he wants, if, you know, the relationship and longstanding friendship and adoration mutual that him and Pete Carroll had, if they could find a way just to sit down, have a drink and kind of hash things out. I don't expect that to happen.
No.
But, you know, Earl has always held the fondest place in Carroll's heart of any player he's ever had in the Seahawks.
Defensive player for definite.
Sure.
Yeah, most definitely. I think David Sue on Twitter has often referred to Earl Thomas's Pete's avatar.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that kind of makes the most sense because he's obviously a defensive back coach. That's his specialty. And he has enabled him to play his defense in the NFL for nearly a decade. But, I think the time has come maybe even to start looking at some safeties in this year's draft. I think one of the mock drafts I read over the weekend give us a safety, free safety, so that could be something to watch over to be. I don't think Earl Thomas will play 2019 in Seattle, unfortunately, and it would be a shame for, as you've said a few times, that we have all those era-defining players and defensive side and we get very little, well, nothing back for them. It would be quite a weird anomaly, but I think that's just how it's going to go, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we will literally get absolutely nothing for the lot of them.
Yeah, well, we get a fifth-round pick for Michael Bennett and a receiver who's now on the IR for the Colts for Michael Bennett. So, yeah, obviously, Sunday night, though, it was time. Well, for me, on the defensive backfield, the time came to learn the name of Akeem King, someone who's literally come out of nowhere over the last couple of weeks. I think he played a pretty big part against the Vikings a few weeks ago, but he was everywhere on Sunday. It's another pretty impressive job of Pete Carroll and all that defensive coaches coaching up a DB to play their way and to not miss a step, because King has not missed a step over the last 2-3 weeks, has he?
No, he's been great. And, you know, the ability of this coaching staff just to, you know, they could probably pick me up and I would make a couple of tackle for losses and yeah, maybe one pick in the last month of the season. They just find a way to utilize my natural gifts, I think, as they're just an amazing coaching staff with stuff like that.
Yeah, it is proper impressive, and it's interesting how they're going to use him and Delano Hill if Tyrique Thompson is in fact back for the playoff run, which it sounds like he may be. Outside of that pass rush, well, they did not get to Mahomes as often as they probably could, because Mahomes is just that good at escaping the pocket like our own Russell Wilson is. They did get him off his spot and did force him to pull out some of his party tricks on Sunday, which is probably as much as you could have asked at certain junctures on Sunday, wasn't it, from the pass rush?
Mahomes is a player that is going to make plays regardless. And it's just about how few can you limit him making. And, you know, we got a bit lucky that he overthrew Travis Kelce, which helped. But apart from that, I think we kept him about as in check as pretty much any other team has done so far.
Yeah, he's threw 3 touchdowns and got quite a lot of fantasy points, much to the chagrin of the guy who needed him not to in our fantasy league's final add-on. But I think I read that it was his 4th lowest completion percentage on the season for a quarterback who has barely missed a throw and barely missed a step through his first year as a starting NFL. And as I said, he's probably, unless he really does have a very negative week 17, he's probably going to be the league's MVP as well. But he is, I think, I've said it for a couple of years to you ad nauseum, he is a special, special player. And that team is going to be good for quite a few while he's around, aren't they?
Yeah, he's... I don't even know if you can say he's the modern quarterback, because I don't think you'll get anyone like him for a long time. He's just completely different to anything we've seen. I mean, he did go, he was like 1 for 9, I think, to start the game. So
yeah,
that wasn't great. And I still think he's got more kinks that need ironing out than like the general fawning would suggest. I don't think he's by any means the perfect quarterback just yet. But I mean, he's so fun to watch.
Yeah, he's ludicrous. And that team is going to, as I said, be around for quite a while. Obviously, one person we've given a lot of criticism to, I think you mentioned that it's maybe time to praise him a little bit. Could Brian Schottenheimer find his way in a head coaching job in 2019, Adam, with what he's done this year?
I have a feeling that he would be very... He's happy with his lot, and I think he knows that he's got pretty much complete control of whatever he wants to do, so long as he fits in with the general scheming of the head coach. And I don't know. I think that might be a bit of a grass is greener on the other side situation for Schottenheimer. Yeah. I don't think he's going to get as cushy a job as he's got now for a long time.
And also a lot of thing people are pointing out for most of the season that he hasn't had a quarterback like Russell Wilson. And you look at the jobs which are probably going to be available or already available. Well, maybe the one already available could be different. There's not going to be many better quarterbacks he's going to land with either other than Wilson.
Well, I mean, Aaron Rodgers would be. Maybe not, because he's
struggled.
He's struggled. But I think he'd be foolish to leave right now, even though the money would be considerably more as a head coach, obviously.
Yeah, talking of more money and talking of all the control, Monday, on Christmas Eve, the Seahawks announced a extension for Pete Carroll, a 3-year extension which takes him to 2021, which will pay him $11 million per year, and he'll be 70 years old when that deal ends. It also cleared up the fact that John Schneider's deal did not end in 2021. It is, in fact, for an extra year into 2022. The job he's done, though, over the past decade or so has been quite ridiculous. But this has, even with the Super Bowl in there, I mean, he's led the team to 7 of his 9 seasons. The 34 years prior for Seahawks saw just 10 playoff appearances, and he also accounts for over a quarter of the franchise's all-time wins. But this year has probably been the best job of the lot, and there's a lot of momentum gathering for the fact that he should be coach of the year at the end of the year, Adam.
Yeah, it's amazing. And actually, I was thinking that, you know, a lot of people like Sherman have been absolutely lambasted for saying that the team have lost their way. Well, and then say, well, look at what they're doing now. Well, they changed pretty much half the roster, and basically any player with a voice was booted out apart from Doug Baldwin and Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
So if anything, it's almost like the coaching staff and led by Pete Carroll accepted that they'd lost their way and made wholesale changes. The joy of this job and the glory of what he's done this year has been turning what we all accepted as a rebuild year. I mean, we you could find any podcast from the summer or the early season where we all said, you know, we don't mind if this is a down year as long as they're ready for next year. And the fact they've just managed to skip that year entirely, that's the true genius of this season's coaching, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially the most of those sides leaving from the defensive side, and apart from a couple of games, and it obviously isn't the same impact and force that it was a few years ago, it's still an effective defense, as it showed on Sunday night, and all of that, a lot of it, all comes back to Pete Carroll, and he's one of, if not the best defensive coach in the league, isn't he?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, is it 10-5 or 9-6? Right, 9-6 we are right now.
9-6.
Can't think of the sixth loss. So the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers is the only game where you'd say we got handled.
Yeah.
I mean, the two Ram games were right in it, and even the Chargers game were right in it at the end. But you'd probably say lost to the better team there. The two games at the start of the season have proven to be very much kind of what if games if we'd, you know, played a bit differently on offense. But it's amazing what they've done this year, because they could even have more wins than they do. Yeah, and there's not many wins that you could say, one.
Yeah, if it does that one. Yeah, I agree. I think this has been unbelievable. The talent to result difference is probably the starkest one in the years that Pete Carroll's been the coach. Obviously, 2013, especially with the
use of hindsight, was a ridiculously deep, stacked, talented, however you want to line it up, roster. Just look at the players they cut, especially from that defensive backfield. We saw one of the guys on Sunday night in Ron Parker, you got people like Will Blackman who couldn't latch on. Obviously, Brandon Branner was suspended late into the season. Burrow Maxwell stepped in and did not skip a beat opposite Richard Sherman that year as well. It's just a ridiculously... ridiculous job he's done for 2018 to get this team not only in the playoffs, not only relevant for this season, but as we said at the start of the podcast, this team has got the attention of the league. It's going to worry some of the teams it might and probably will face in the playoffs, and that is just a ridiculous testament to what Pete Carroll has done as in the offseason, where he quite clearly and effectively took back control of everything, Adam.
100%. Yeah, to be where we are right now is, yeah, it deserves Coach of the Year status, quite frankly. Yeah. And if he doesn't win it, oh, I don't know, someone's going to have to seriously have gone some.
Yeah, the only other one could be...
Matt Nagy?
Yeah, probably for the job. But I think a lot of that is due to the fact that he's got one of the best defensive coordinator guys out there, and Vic Fangio, who did it a few years ago for quite a few years in San Francisco with Jim Harbaugh. So it kind of, you don't really have that second guess, or you can point like you can with Russell Wilson's MVP stuff, where you can point to the running game. With Matt Nagy, you can point to Vic Fangio. With Pete Carroll, you can't really point to any other coaches to the level you could point to Vic Fangio, could you?
Nope, not at all. Couldn't agree more.
So, yeah, obviously a few stats. I'm going to say a few. There's quite a lot of stats coming out of Sunday night. I'm going to go player by player because I wrote them all down, as Adam saw earlier in the week. Doug Baldwin, Seahawks number 89, is now third all-time in franchise history with over 6,500 yards. He passed Daryl Jackson on Sunday night. Only Brian Blades and Steve Largent ahead of him now. He's 49 touchdowns for Doug, sees him lie in second. 51, which is just ridiculous, behind Steve Largent's franchise leading mark of 100. Oh, and he's also third all-time in catches for the Seahawks, with 491, behind Brian Blades and number 80. Tyler Lockett now has his career high in receptions, yards per catch, and touchdowns in 2018. He needs 35 all-purpose yards on Sunday to pass 1,000 yards all-purpose for the first time in his career. Chris Carson is the first 1,000-yard rushing Seahawk since 2014 when Marshawn Lynch did it. He's the first non-Lynch 1,000-yard rusher for the team since Sean Alexander did it in 2005. It's the 21st time a Seahawk has ran for more than 1,000 yards in a season, but he's just the sixth different Seahawk to do so. Marshawn Lynch, Sean Alexander, Kurt Warner, Chris Warren, and Ricky Waters were the others. Russell Wilson tied Dave Craig's franchise record for touchdowns at 195. He reached the mark in 18 less games and with almost 700 less yards in the air than Craig threw for in his Seahawk career. First ever quarterback to start a career with 7 straight winning seasons, and as much bunk as the QB wins maybe as a stat, that is pretty damn cool, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm pleased for him that he doesn't have to go through a down year, because much of an annoyance that he can be sometimes, you can't doubt the guy's professionalism and his commitment to, you know, dragging his team over the line. So it's great for him.
Yeah, on Sunday though, he needs one passing touchdown to set a new franchise record for touchdown passes on a season, which is currently at 34, which he tied. He currently at 34, which tied his totals, which he got in 2015 and 2017. If he doesn't throw an interception on Sunday, it will be his career low on interceptions in a season, with just 6 so far in 2018. The Seahawks defense now lead the NFL with a turnover differential of plus 14 after the forced fumble from Justin Coleman and the fumble recovery from Jaron Reed. And the 467 yards from the offense was a season high, the most since week 8 in 2017 in that shootout against Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. That took me a hell of a long time to collate on Christmas Eve, and it took me a hell of a lot even longer to read out, Adam.
I think you've missed the best one. The Seahawks have turned the ball over 10 times this year, which I believe is joint with the lowest ever from a team in the NFL with the Patriots and the Ravens, I think, in 2010 and 2011, respectively.
That's pretty mad. I did miss that one. That's
See, mate, cool. So you this, do all your research, and I'm like the gunslinger quarterback who just comes in, flings it around. I'm like Brett Favre. Didn't even know what nickel and dime defense was, but he comes in and flings the ball around, and he gets the big play.
Yeah, okay, well, before you know, I might have left that out just so you could have your moment in the sun.
That's very true. You're a good man.
Yeah.
No one else believes it, but I do, don't worry. Yeah.
Well, it is the season of giving after all. Moving on, though, the Seahawks round off the regular season for 2018 with the visit of the Arizona Cardinals to CenturyLink Field and all what they do and probably more likely don't bring to the table for Sunday night. So let's chat about that some, shall we?
Hi, this is Jessamyn McIntyre, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
Yeah, the Arizona Cardinals currently stand in place, in charge, in control of the number one overall pick for the 2019 NFL Draft. And with how they've looked for most of the season, despite a few flashes from their rookie quarterback, Josh Rosen, they're probably going to be the number one pick, aren't they, after Sunday as well, aren't they, Adam?
Yeah, and for the second year in a row, we're going to face the Cardinals at home, with the coach probably having his last game of his tenure there.
Yeah, they are bereft of pretty much anything positive, aren't they? I mean, Josh Rosen, David Johnson's kind of struggled this year, but Josh Rosen's probably the main bright spot of that year, this year for them.
Oh, and he's hardly been, you know, one of those very, very strong light bulbs. He's been an environmentally friendly light bulb of a bright spot, I'd say.
Yeah, and a lot of people... in the media, cover the NFL, just a shoulder shrug and a lot of sympathy for number 11, Larry Fitzgerald, who has every right over the last few years to gripe and complain, but he's still one of the classiest acts in the league, isn't he, Larry Fitzgerald?
Yeah, he is, and he had a really nice moment with an AP reporter in his last press conference. The way in which his last few years have had to been petered out really by poor play around him is a real shame. He deserved better, but he's not going to get it, unfortunately. And is he definitely retiring?
I think it would be a wait and see, but I think he said he won't play anywhere but Arizona. So
okay,
he'll be either one more year with the young quarterback, and I hope David Johnson, I hope they get a proper coach in, I guess, or it might be off into the sunset and retire peacefully and comfortably as a 10-year long or 10-year tenured NFL player can, but it would be a shame to see him go, but at the same time, as a fan of a team who see him twice a year, it wouldn't be that much of a crying shame, would it?
No, I'm not going to miss his play against us, that's for sure. I'll miss him in the other 14 games, and I'll miss having the guy in the league, but yeah, he made too many important and annoyingly clutch catches against us for me to be too gutted.
Yeah, so Sunday, though, the defense for the Cardinals, as you said earlier, that they have caused us a few issues over recent years. Obviously, Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden, who's completely disappeared off the face of the earth, I think. Those the chief ones amongst them who caused us issues. But without Tyrann Mathieu, they don't seem to have the same energy to the team. Obviously, not many teams would after the season they've had. But this is a defense which is susceptible, especially to our offensive strength and offensive focal point, Adam, in the run game, which is obviously they give up 160 odd yards to CJ Anderson, who was only signed 3 days before the game last week against the Rams, Adam.
Yeah, and something that's personified Cardinals games against the Seahawks, especially at CenturyLink, is, you know, the Cardinals players running through brick walls for Bruce Arians, and you just don't get the feeling that we're going to see that for Wilkes this week. Whereas Arians obviously was an incredible motivator, and they all absolutely loved the guy, and he made them feel like even though the game was worth nothing, it's worth something. You just can't imagine you're going to get that level of effort from the Cardinals this weekend, even in a rivalry divisional game.
Yeah, no, I think that's the only thing which will carry on through. I saw quite a fair bit of their game against the Rams on Sunday. It doesn't seem like there's much, as I say, that word energy in that building. Or on the field from those players, they kind of just seem to be counting down the days on a chalkboard until a new broom sweeps through a team which is devoid of quite a lot. And it's going to be interesting what they do over the offseason, not just with the coaching and the players, but also what they do with that number one pick, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, can they really afford to put it on like a defensive tackle? They need some talent.
Yeah, I mean,
and they're not bad in the front seven.
No, they're not. I think Nick Bosa will be hoping they win on Sunday. Because he's obviously going to be the number one pick. He's been the number one pick for quite a few years, really, since his brother left Ohio State. He's been this will be the year he'll be the number one pick. So if it's the Cardinals, the chances of that. But also, at the same time, is a team really going to give up a lot to get to number one for a defensive end?
I doubt it. I can't see it.
And there's no quarterbacks, really. I mean, unless Kyler Murray changes his mind. Justin Herbert from Oregon's decided to stay in and for another year in Eugene. Dwayne Haskins that's really rich for him, and outside of that, there's not a lot in terms of quarterbacks. So they've picked a bad year to be bad, really, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, obviously having the quarterback they want to go with will help. But with a heavily defensive draft incoming and such a lack of quality offensive players, you do worry that, well, I don't worry because we played them twice a year. I hope they absolutely rot. But for them, it doesn't appear like it's a great year to be this bad.
No. Confidence on Sunday?
Yeah, I am. I think it'll be a 2-score win. Let's go 26-10.
I think I've gone 36-13 in ours, which is actually 3 scores, so I can't count. I think everything we just said about this team, the breadth of anything and one of those things is ability to probably give a shit on Sunday. I think that's going to count against some of this team. The Seahawks on the opposite side after Sunday probably could not be in higher spirits and want to kind of continue to send a message to the league for when the calendar turns to 2019 and it's the playoffs and they head off probably to Dallas, Adam.
All eyes have been on Dallas for a little while now, and I think I think 86% of your focus can be on Dallas. That's apparently the likelihood that we'll be playing in there next, you'd assume, Sunday night.
Yeah, it's just sounding like it's going to be the half nine kick on the Sunday night next weekend with the Chicago, whenever they play, or maybe the Rams if they really do crap the bed on Sunday, that other game being on the Saturday night. Talking of the Rams, there's somewhat off in that building and that team. It's now obviously outside of Aaron Donald. It's not been a great month for that team, Adam.
No, well, I mean, it's funny how it's only 17 weeks of the season, but it's incredible how long the NFL season goes in terms of the narratives and the ebb and the flow. I think, as Damashek said, Ryan Fitzpatrick happened this season in the Deshaun Watson clothes. Yeah. And it feels like absolutely years ago that was a thing. It's a much longer season than you think. And at the minute, I don't think there's any team that, you know, earlier on in October, people were just saying, well, you know, just seal it. It's guaranteed to be Chiefs Rams Super Bowl. Put a bow on it and send them to Atlanta. Now let's not even bother playing the rest of the games. But when you do play the rest of the games, it's amazing how different and how much it all unfolds.
Yeah, I want no part of New Orleans, I've got to be honest, especially at home. I want no part of that.
Agreed. I think that's the one team that I just cannot see how we can beat.
No, I think the AFC side, the summer off with Brady and the Patriots, the Chiefs, as we saw, have their, especially on the defensive side, their frailties. The Chargers obviously let a big one slip against the Ravens. AFC South could be absolutely anybody. But again, I wouldn't really want to see, if I'm a fan of another AFC team, and said a few weeks ago, I'd want no part of Andrew Luck in January because he just seems to be on a one-man mission to right every wrong and every negative word said about him over the last couple of years while he dealt with his shoulder issues. But yeah, I agree. I don't think there's much to be afraid of, but as ever with these Seahawks, it's probably just going to come down to staying out of our own way first and foremost, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be not holding, not giving up stupid penalties, and having the quarterback to make the big play when you need him to.
Talking of the AFC, their playoff breakdown is somewhat ridiculous, and now I can't find the thing. So who do you see the six teams being in the AFC or after Sunday? Obviously, there's anything could happen. I think there's Titans, Colts, Texans can still win the AFC South. The Chargers and the Chiefs can still win the AFC West. The Chargers, Chiefs, and Patriots can still be the number one seed and have home field advantage through the playoffs. Obviously, the Ravens and Steelers are going against each other, which we'll come on to in a sec with getting in the bin. But who do you think the six will be on that side of the NFL?
Well, I think the Patriots, Texans, Chiefs, and Chargers are already in the playoffs, aren't they? So there's only, there's only two spots up for grabs. And they will be sealed if the Colts beat the Titans and the Ravens beat the Browns, which I think will happen. And so I think those will be the two teams that make up the other two spots.
I got Baker Mayfield, man. He makes shit happen. I think that could, this could be the way to end the year. I mean, the fact he stared down Hugh Jackson is amazing. And the way he hasn't apologised for it is also amazing. His weekly Baker Mayfield amazing part of this podcast. But yeah, I've got a feeling that that Ravens, if Greg Williams is different to any other defensive coordinator for a lot of negative reasons, but also a lot of positive reasons as well. And I think the one team the Ravens wouldn't want to face is a Cleveland Browns team, a confident Cleveland Browns team on every phase, every facet of the game. I think the Ravens, I think, are favoured by about four, but I would not. You can't really count out someone like Baker Mayfield, who's done it for his entire collegiate and now NFL career, isn't he?
You can't count them out, but I just wonder if how much it's going to mean to Baltimore as we'll tip them over the line. I mean, it's I'm not sure if you've seen the film Semi Pro with Will Ferrell, but kind of Cleveland, it's kind of like the Flint, Michigan Tropics trying to get into fourth place when there's no merger happening anyway. It's kind of a victory to send the Coliseum wild and explode the cannon. Whereas the Ravens have got something to actually play for. So I think that will tip them
over. Yeah, but I think an off-season with Baker Mayfield basking in the glory of ending one team's season by beating them could be something entertaining to watch.
That is true.
So yeah, I do hope the Browns win, but also I think it'd be quite funny if Roethlisberger missed the playoffs, so it's quite an awkward one. But oh yeah, I also do think that the Colts will beat the Titans, because that is quite a machine at times on the offensive side of the ball. And obviously defensively, they shut down the Giants, which isn't obviously all that to do. And in the late part of that game, I seen them completely shut out the Cowboys the week before. So NFC East have had their issues against the Colts, and I do think that will be I think the Colts will win out and take their place in January again. And Andrew Luck is probably going to win comeback player of the year, isn't he?
Struggling to think of many others. Well, maybe JJ Watt, but I think they're always going to give it to a quarterback over another position. So and you'd be extremely cold-hearted to begrudge him that.
So moving on, this week's time for this week's Get in the Bin.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
This week's Get in the Bin has an added and has an addition via Connor Tyrrell, who commented on the hastily posted post we put out a few hours ago. Connor wants to put in the bin the Steelers fans rooting for the Browns to beat the Ravens. Just handle your own affairs in the regular season, or as he puts in brackets, or pay Le'Veon Bell. Do you agree with Steelers in the bin for that reason, Adam?
Well, I mean, there's two separate things there. They should have handled their own business, but ultimately they can't make the playoffs unless the Ravens beat the Browns. So, I mean, what else are they going to do? They're not going to support the Ravens, are they, in that situation? No. Especially as the Ravens are their number one rival.
Yeah, but also I think the fact that they should just win, and just you can't point to other teams' failings or successes as a reason you didn't do it. You just, especially on Sunday night, with a few weird officiating calls yet again in the NFL, they haven't handled their own business over the last couple of weeks when it looked, after they annihilated the Panthers and ruin that team, that they were set to be not only the champs, but they looked good to be pushing the Patriots for Patriots and Chiefs for one of first or second seed, didn't they?
Oh, there's nothing better as a fan than apportioning blame elsewhere when it's nothing to do with you. I think you've got that. I'm not on board with you there. If you can blame anyone, you know, send out the blame. Hit them with some fire. No, I'd go right ahead, Steelers fans. You give them hell. And if you don't make the playoffs, I would 100% blame the Ravens fans and not put any blame on yourself, because that's the way you should do it.
Okay, I don't think I've got one this week. You're getting a bin this week, Adam.
Amazingly, and this is a bit of a stretch, I'm going to put Blair Walsh in the bin.
Okay.
Because I don't think that Sebastian Janikowski would still be on the Seahawk roster if the Blair Walsh project didn't happen last year. And I think they're so terrified of changing to a guy that maybe, you know, will he, won't he, because of how awful it was with Blair Walsh last year, that they're terrified of cutting Janikowski, who, let's be honest, has no right to be on this roster anymore. He's missing kicks left, right and center, and not even hard kicks. And yeah, at some point, it's going to cost you. Now, I'm not saying that there's necessarily...
It's quite hard to miss a kick center.
Yeah, well, that's also true. Well, you could go low. You could go low. I don't know. I mean, you could argue who else is there, but I'm never a fan in sport of not changing something because something may or may not manifest itself when something is clearly not right. You know, for one thing, the guy's body looks to have broken down, and they're talking about Michael Dixon taking field goals with drop kicks on Sunday, which is just ridiculous. Why he can't kick it off the floor, I don't know. Maybe there isn't another holder. I don't know. It doesn't seem that'd be the most efficient way to do it. But yeah, Blair Walsh, get in the bin again, and you've been missed.
Sebastian Janikowski's been Sebastian Janikowski. He's been this wild and inconsistent his entire way. But I think, as we said last week about Janikowski, he's a tougher nut to crack than Blair Walsh was last year. I think that's the biggest reason they've signed him, and I think he's the biggest reason he's still here, because he doesn't seem to let things like his missus linger, when obviously it completely wrote off Blair Walsh's NFL career. So I think he's going to see the season. I'm not going to change kicker now, but I don't think he'll be here next year. I think, as we said maybe last week, I think that'd be an interesting thing to watch, to see what they do, because around the NFL it doesn't seem like rookie kickers get much of a leash, but that veteran presence in that position with the mental scarring to get past misses in a building like Central Link, or in games where you'd hope the 2019 Seahawks will be playing in with high leverage and everything, it might be too much for a rookie, so it would be interesting to see what they do. But yeah, I think Sebastian Janikowski's been Sebastian Janikowski. I don't think his stats are that wild or lower or worse than it ever has been for the former first round pick. The Oakland Raiders use a first round pick on a kicker. I think it was John Gruden there then, 18 years ago? No, I think it was just before he was in Tampa then. Yeah, anyway, go off on a tangent. One to praise over the course of the last week, Adam, Seahawks or otherwise in the NFL?
You've got to give Greg Williams a degree of credit, because he really, you would not have expected them to go 6-2 in 8 games with him. And I wonder if they're at a stage where if they beat Baltimore on Sunday, he kind of has to get the job.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's going to be unless they really want to go all in with Baker and get an offensive coach. I think a lot of talk, Bruce Arians has been making a lot of noise about wanting that job. Someone like that, offensive, experienced offensive coach who has history of dealing and flourishing with quarterbacks, young quarterbacks like Mayfield is and will be obviously next year as well. That could be the only thing which is held back against Greg Williams, and also the fact he's not the most genial type either.
But, yeah, I mean, look, I should say I don't think that Greg Williams should get the job regardless. But if you go 7-2 over 9 games with a rookie quarterback, it becomes a very tricky. It's hard not to give him the job.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. Like I said, I think the only other thing would be is if they really want to go offensive, but I think they did that with Hugh Jackson and that went awfully. Well, I don't think I've got anyone for this either. I think one to praise for the Seahawks game is definitely Akeem King. He came out of absolutely nowhere, as we said. NFL wide, it's probably going to be Nick Foles. I think he deserves a hell of a lot of credit for how he's just kind of got on with. He's not like Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona. He could cause a proper scene in Philadelphia after what he did this time. Well, this time a year ago, leading that team through the end of the season, then obviously into the playoffs, then obviously to the Super Bowl and winning that Super Bowl against the Belichick-Brady machine. But to do that, to put them in contention going into Week 17, I don't think they'll get in, because I think the Vikings will beat the Bears, who I think they might take their eyes off the ball a little bit on Sunday. To put this team in, put that team in position with all the issues they had for most of this year. Obviously, Carson Wentz was quite clearly never healthy. But also the fact of how bad Nick Foles was at the start of the season that made it possible for Carson Wentz to probably be rushed back a little bit and then to be more effective for a few weeks until his body started to break down again. Nick Foles has just got on with it and not caused a stir. He took quite a bit of a hefty contract in the offseason for a backup, but he's just got on with it. And as I said, he could have caused a scene, and he's not. And he's if they can get there with things going their way on Sunday night, not many teams are going to want to play them with their recent past, are they?
No, and again, it's kind of a Greg Williams-style situation. You may not think he's the best man for the job, but how are you going to legislate to the Eagles fans if Nick Foles takes you to the, I don't know, let's say the NFC Championship game, that he's not your starting quarterback next year? It'd be really difficult.
Yes. There's a lot of talk of him being a massive trade piece over this offseason. If he does anything, if he takes him to the second week of the playoffs, I think it could be even a heftier price to pay, especially with some quarterback positions probably not being resolved during the draft next April. It could be interesting. But yeah, I think there's a lot of credit for how he's conducted himself and obviously how he's led that team to a brink of maybe the playoffs again. Week 17, Adam, lock and shock. The lock of the week for you is...
I haven't got the schedule up, but I am going to go with the Colts.
I'd probably agree with that. I'm going to go with the Texans to beat the Jaguars, even though Blake Bortles is back as a starting quarterback for the Jags. I think the Texans are, even without Demaryius Thomas, are going to be too much for that Jags team, which is quite impressively lost their way. And I think Tom Coughlin's come out and said that Doug Marone's job is safe, which is bizarre, really. Adam?
Yeah, do you not mean that you think that they'll win, especially because Blake Bortles is back under centre?
Yeah, I guess that is what I mean, but Kelly Kessler was even worse. But yeah, he's not the worst. He might not be the worst USC quarterback in the league either, though. Shock of the week?
Shock of the week. Let's go... not great. Let's go Buccaneers to beat the Falcons. It's not really a shock in terms of a lot of things, but kind of you wouldn't have suggested that to end the season when you're discussing this in September that the Buccaneers would beat the Falcons to leave them kind of 5-11, 6-10.
Yeah, that's been a tough season for the Falcons. It appears that all their coordinators are going to be looking for new jobs in the next, well, probably next week. Black Monday rolls around in a few days. For me, shock of the week, I just want it because I then want him to walk into the press conference after retire on the spot with the greatest mic drop in New York Giants history. I think the Giants are going to beat the Cowboys on Sunday, and then Eli Manning can run off into the sunset and just sit back and watch the carnage of what that quarterback position could be for a few years to come. That team has been in quite a few close games quietly, and especially the last few weeks, like Odell Beckham. So I do think they could cause some issues for a Cowboy team who are not very good when they're outside of Jerry World, are they?
No. The Titans absolutely manhandled the Giants up front a couple of weeks ago, even in that crazy rain. So on how early they can get Zeke in the game and see what difference that makes.
Next week we will be back with a playoff preview podcast. I think last time we did that a couple of years ago, we were counting down the days for the season to end because we didn't hold that much hope, and we were proven succinctly right, Adam, I think, a couple of years ago. Was it the Falcons who we ran into?
Well, we must have beaten the Lions first.
Yeah, we did. But the last podcast preview we did.
That was basically just a yeah, that was not the most fun because we knew what was happening about 3 months before, didn't we?
So we'll be back. If it's the Cowboys, we do also have a guest lined up if diaries and calendars and timings work with that. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can. The Podbean, the Pedestrian Podcast, podbean.com, UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Facebook, also the Pedestrian Podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, at Seahawkers UK. Website is ukseahawkers.com. Before we go, though, we're talking of the Facebook page, there is one question from Dave Bailey. What role do we see for Shaquem Griffin next season? To his untrained eye, he always thought he could step into the cam role. I think we said a couple of weeks ago he's nowhere near there, is he? He's not ready yet, is he, Adam?
No, it'll be interesting to see. I'd assume he'd be given another year. If he managed to make the team this year, you'd think he'd make another one. But I would imagine next year he's going to have to show a real role to fit into, because he's been a good special teams player without being so good at special teams that he legislates a place on the roster unquestionably. So I think it's going to be linebacker. But it just depends on how they intend to use him, because the way in which he seemed to make the majority of his splash plays at UCF is not really the way in which you use linebackers here.
No, and it has also hasn't been the way he's made any sort of plays. We're talking people who stay on the roster for just special teams. Nico Thorpe has basically done that for quite a while now, isn't he?
That is
true. 3 or 4 years he's been a Seahawk. There is a few meets being lined up as well. Birmingham for the Super Bowl meet at O'Neill's on Broad Street. There is still about 15 to 20 spots left. I'm not too sure on the official number, but we are limited as the bigger room and bigger space will not be ready for us come the first weekend in February and Super Bowl Sunday. Who knows? That could be absolute carnage if the Seahawks don't lose for the next 6 weeks. And anything happening down your way, Adam?
Well, I'm going to have a chat and see if we can get something going as a London meet for the Sunday night, if that is when we play our playoff game. So we'll put a pin in that and have a look on the Facebook group, and we'll see if we can get anything done with that.
Yeah, so check the Facebook and Twitter pages the early part of next week for information and location and things like that. Outside of that, though, it is Super Bowl meet in Birmingham is happening on February 3rd. O'Neill's on Broad Street. Enjoy the game from wherever, whatever corner of the globe, country, and universe you watch it from. This week, though, as with last week, on behalf of every UK Seahawk and all the UK Seahawk as official fan chapter, and both myself and Adam on the Pedestrian Podcast, I'd like to wish everyone who listens, everyone who sent in a question, or with Connor's case, a Get in the Bin nominee. An enjoyable and safe new year, and we will talk to you all in 2019 as these Seahawks are playoff bound. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
Amazing. You could tell a lot about somebody when they go through a whole lot of stuff, and the fact that he's out there playing, the fact that he's out there still making plays says a lot about who he is, and I love that dude, man. He goes out there, he has that winning mindset every time he's out there on the field, regardless if he's getting double teamed, regardless if he's getting triple teamed, he does whatever he has to do to be able to help us win, and that's one of the reasons why we're so great in the receiver.